Welcome to Red Meat, the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Today we're talking about peace in the Middle East and the fact it suddenly seems possible. Israel's government has approved the U.S.-brokered Gaza ceasefire plan almost exactly 2 years after Hamas's brutal attack. The deal that ended it is a landmark accomplishment for President Donald Trump. Here's more.
Let's go live to Jerusalem on our KCBS News reporter, Linda Gradstein. Linda, good to talk with you today. So let's review. What is the framework of this first phase of a peace deal?
Well, the Israeli government is set to approve it in the next few hours, and that will start the 72-hour clock. During that 72 hours, in fact, probably about 24 hours later, Israel will withdraw from the Palestinian population centers in order to help Hamas find the bodies of some of the hostages who were either killed or died in captivity. And then within 72 hours, so either on Sunday or Monday, Hamas will release all of the living hostages. There are believed to be 20 hostages still alive, and the bodies of those they are able to find. Israel will withdraw further, and Israel will free at least 250 Palestinians who were convicted of murder, possibly also somebody named Marwan Barghouti, who could be a future leader of the Palestinian people. At that point, after that 72 hours, after those hostages are released and Israeli hospitals are preparing to receive them, this is a huge deal in Israel. You just heard the sound. A lot of humanitarian aid will get into Gaza. There's this sense of relief on both sides. But as Haley reported, there's still, it's not clear exactly what this will mean for the future, how it goes from here to Hamas disarming and a new government for Gaza. And those negotiations will take a while, as well as rebuilding the Gaza Strip, which has basically been devastated.
Linda, there have been so many peace proposals over the last months that one side or the other would reject. What is the degree of confidence that this one's actually going to stick?
Well, the fact is that President Trump has gotten so involved in it, and it's very hard for either side to say no to President Trump. And certainly Israel can't say no. And Hamas was pressured by Qatar. And there's also a sense that both sides feel that they aren't making any more gains. The war had kind of been stagnating. It had basically come to an end, but it just wasn't, from neither the Israeli side nor the Palestinian side, was it achieving anything. Israel is facing growing diplomatic isolation. So I think there, in some ways, President Trump's putting forward a peace plan gave both sides kind of a way to climb down and try to sort of move forward on something. Whether it will be this grand peace in the Middle East, as President Trump has said, I think remains to be seen. But I think, it's pretty clear that this first stage will go through.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that he wants to basically wipe Hamas off the face of the earth. Will Hamas still exist when this peace deal is done?
Well, Hamas is an ideology as much as anything else. So that ideology will still exist, but Hamas will not have weapons. It will, all of the tunnels that it still has, all of the ways it has to attack Israel will be dismantled. And Hamas has agreed that it won't play a role in any future Palestinian government. So will there still be people who believe in Hamas's ideology? Yes. But as even already, Hamas cannot really pose a military threat to Israel at this point.
And finally, Linda, what do we know about the hostages set to be released, both alive and dead?
Well, as I said, there are 48 hostages. There are 20 of them, all men. Mostly fairly young in their, 20s and 30s. Some of them were soldiers. Some of them were at this Nova music festival. And in the last month or so, there have been a couple of videos released. There was one horrifying video in which one of them was skeletal and was forced to dig his own grave. There have been other videos that Hamas has released as propaganda in which the hostages did not seem to be in as bad a situation. There are reports that Hamas is already moving them and getting them ready to come to Israel. The hospitals are set to, they say they will be deal with malnutrition and things like that. And so they will be in a very difficult physical and emotional condition. That said, other hostages who were released just a few months ago actually have made a real comeback and seem to be doing relatively well. So the fact that they're young, the fact that they're strong, all of the, in terms of the dead hostages, one of them is a woman and all of the rest are bodies of men. And for those families, too, it will be a relief to be able to have a funeral and to bury their loved ones.
Many people were disappointed, including President Donald Trump himself, when the leader of the free world wasn't awarded the Nobel Peace Prize on Friday for his work in the Middle East. Here's Bob Rose at WSKY Radio with more on that.
Some of your top stories, of course, you've got the Nobel Peace Prize that did not go to Donald Trump. And I know the big question is, so who is this? Who's this Maria Corina Machado? She is somebody who is receiving the Nobel Peace Prize for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy.
Okay.
So she's had to deal with that Maduro guy who is an authoritarian and, you know, they don't believe that the election was legit.
Right.
But he's still in power. She fought against that. But here's the interesting thing, and I'm not trying to take anything away from her. I'd never heard of her before. I'm just saying that apparently she's been in hiding because this Maduro really is a bad guy, right?
Right.
Likes to get rid of his enemies.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of way, you know, authoritarianism. That's true authoritarianism when you kill your enemies.
So that's like legit making your enemies disappear. Well, he really does disappear people, as they say about Trump.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so she's been in hiding for 14 months.
Oh.
So I'm thinking to myself, I go, well, I mean, appreciate the efforts you made, but those efforts ended, what, like a year ago, or at least for you to be physically present.
Right.
And Trump, with this huge peace deal, the only thing I can think is that, you know, the Nobel folks got together and that this was pretty much a done deal, even though the announcement didn't come out until 5 a.m. our time this morning.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been weeks that this process obviously went on, and I think it was predetermined. But you have to kind of wonder, did they get together this week and go, oh, my goodness, we've already picked somebody, and look what Trump's and his administration are pulling off.
I think that there maybe is not a great love for him within this body, is my guess. And that maybe it was an easy excuse, even faced with the truth that, yes, they should have quickly changed the award to award Donald Trump. I think they basically said, well, yeah, it's too late in the process.
Right.
And that's their out. And, you know, look.
This didn't happen until this week, even though the process had been going on for him.
So do we give them the benefit of the doubt, or do we just chalk this up as another, you know, body that, you know, is left of center that's never gonna embrace somebody like a Donald Trump?
You know, in this one, I'm almost, because of the timing, I think I'll give them a partial pass. Because I think they were already on the road, and at that point, do you change your mind the last couple of days? Maybe.
Now,
I don't know.
What, wasn't Obama a recipient of that, like, very shortly after he took office?
Once they heard his name, he won. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so,
I don't know what he had done, but yeah.
So, Nobel Peace Prize, they had a chance to kind of gain, in my mind, some credibility here.
Yes. Yeah, you are right.
And I don't think they did. I think they blew it.
How did this peace plan come together? Marco Rubio laid it out in detail, and Mark Cox discusses how involved Trump was every step of the way.
All right, the videos are coming in from all around the world with people popping corks on champagne bottles and waving American and Israeli flags in honor of this, at least, ceasefire that's underway now, if not confirmed Mideast peace just yet. So we will we'll see how long that continues. But you're listening to the show this morning as we're watching pictures of people streaming back into Gaza. And I'm not sure they'd be doing that if they weren't fairly convinced that there weren't going to be bombs falling on them here shortly. Checked in earlier today with our friend Jonathan Savage, who's reporting live from Israel this morning. And everybody over there is holding their breath that the peace holds. The wild card here is Hamas, right? So obviously we'll be keeping an eye on that as well. Right now, in fact, Ethan, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I'm Robert De Niro asking you to stand up and be counted in the nationwide No Kings protest on October 18th.
Oh, the raging bull. He's still mad. He's so mad. He wants you to stand up and go outside with all the people who apparently don't like kings. But they want to act like kings and shut up your right to speak.
Part of the law, by the way, that law, John, goes back to the 1800s that says if the government's in a shutdown, the president, whoever the president is, gets the authority and requirement to determine what gets funded and what doesn't.
Yeah, it's possible if that passed in the 1800s, Chuck Schumer voted for it, I guess. I don't know. He's been around a long time. But Donald Trump is about to institute some of those Project 2025 cuts that the Democrats hollered about for so long.
Obviously, the President of the United States has a lot of interaction with a lot of people who are very pro-Israel. I think that was an important set of experiences in life. He also, of course, knew one of the most famous Palestinians in the world, Chuck Schumer. And I think without that background of knowledge, it would have been impossible to get us to this moment.
I love, that's funny. J.D. Vance yesterday jacking with Chuck Schumer, the Jewish member of the Senate, who's probably been the least supportive member for Israel, which is shocking. And J.D. Vance able to poke the bear there a little bit during that meeting yesterday.
Well, we go to Marco. You can talk a little bit about what's going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. President. I don't know the... One day, perhaps, the entire story will be told about the events of yesterday, but suffice it to say, it's not an exaggeration that none of it would have been possible without the President of the United States being involved.
Yep, that is true. This is a true fact, and I want to take a few minutes here this morning to kind of flesh that out a little bit, because everyone, you know, by the way, in case you're just waking up, they've already handed out the Nobel Peace Prize. The winner is not Donald J. Trump. But that's not a surprise. The media is the one that's been playing this up. Do I think Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize? I thought he deserved it in his first term. He's done much more to deserve it than many of the people who've won it, including Barack Hussein Obama. But it's irrelevant because about 10 days after Donald Trump got sworn in, that was the nomination deadline. For this year's Nobel Peace Prize, the nomination deadline was last January. At that point, other than being reelected, Donald Trump had not accomplished anything toward peace in any of the six or now seven conflicts that he has solved. So it's not an issue. The Nobel Peace Prize is not an issue. What the world needs to understand is this wasn't Donald Trump going into a meeting room at the White House and saying, all right, here are the 20 points. This is my 20-point plan. Go distribute it and see how it floats. That's not how Trump works. The reason he can take credit for the success of this so far, and none of us has a crystal ball to say it's going to hold because Hamas is the wild card, but he's the one that put together the coalition that made this possible. And I want you to hear this soundbite. It's a little long. It's about a minute and a half. But Marco Rubio explains how all these pieces fit together. Go ahead and play cut 12, please.
Well, we go to Marco. You can talk a little bit about what's going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. President. I don't know the... One day, perhaps, the entire story will be told about the events of yesterday, but suffice it to say, it's not an exaggeration that none of it would have been possible without the President of the United States being involved. Began with your trip to the Middle East, where these relationships were forged with partners in the region, personal relationships, close relationships that created the foundation where all of this was possible, where I think this really took a turn. Remember, a month ago, I never thought this was possible. Where it really took a turn about a month ago, less than a couple weeks ago, is when we were at the United Nations, and you convened a historic meeting, not simply of Arab countries, but of Muslim-majority countries from around the world, including Indonesia was there, Pakistan was there, and created this coalition behind this plan. Then on that following Monday, you met with the Prime Minister of Israel here, and that plan was presented. And then, of course, our great negotiating team followed up on it. In the interim, again, perhaps the stories will be told, perhaps they will never be told, the President had some extraordinary phone calls and meetings that required a high degree of intensity and commitment and made this happen. And I think what's important to understand is that yesterday what happened was really a human story. There's a geopolitical aspect to it. There's no doubt about it. It creates the conditions for Gaza to one day be a normal place again and people to have a better life and Israelis to be safe. But yesterday was a human story. And because of the work you put in, and honestly, there is not only is there no other leader in the world that could have put this together, Mr. President, but frankly, I don't know of any American president in the modern era that could have made this.
Yeah, thank you, Marco Rubio, for pointing that out. Now, you can say he's sitting there blowing smoke up the president's rear end, but what he's describing is something we haven't seen out of a president, an American president, in terms of leadership in many, many, many years. Maybe the coalition that George H.W. Bush put together in the first Gulf War, I don't know. That was probably a little easier sell than this, for sure. But I just thought it was important that people hear what he had to say, because he does deserve, if, assuming this works, he deserves a lot of credit for at least to where it's gotten to this point.
It's a lot of talent involved, I'll tell you, but there was a certain degree of luck, too. You know, you need luck also.
President Trump speaking last night on Sean Hannity's show regarding the peace deal, and there seems to be a lot of optimism surrounding this deal. Is this the one that is for real? Let's ask an expert guest on that. Fred Flights joins us. He's the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, a former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, and House of Intelligence Committee staff member. His book, An America First Approach to U.S. National Security. Mr. Flights, thank you for being here today. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Hey, Annie, good to be here.
So I want to give you the opportunity to answer a very broad question. Is this peace deal, does this feel like the real thing for you, the peace between Israel and Hamas?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think we need to look at it in two ways. First of all, the president was asked an important question at the cabinet meeting today. And that was, well, in the subsequent stages, maybe Hamas won't agree to disarm. Maybe the other provisions for rule of Gaza after the war won't work out. And he said, our priority right now is getting the hostages out. Let's do that, then we'll worry about the rest later. I think we will succeed on the other provision. But Trump has the right approach. Let's save human lives. These hostages won't be alive much longer because of the squalid conditions they're living in these tunnels in Gaza. But I think Trump has the support of Arab states and of Israel to make this work, but I still think there's some work to do.
So at that cabinet meeting earlier, Secretary of State Rubio lauded praise on President Trump for being the man who could get this done. And it's a consistency that I hear. Now, I know that President Trump likes to get credit for things. He often acknowledges that he does things and knows that the media won't give him credit for it. But it does seem like the president's number one skill, the art of the deal, might have come into play here. Why was President Trump able to get this done when other people have not?
Well, he made himself a credible mediator who was trusted by all sides. And let's keep in mind that where was the president's first working trip abroad? To the Gulf. Gave him a chance to talk to Qatar, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, to get them on board. And he's made it clear to the Arabs and to the Israelis that although he's the most pro-Israel president in history, he will be tough on Netanyahu. He will make Netanyahu agree to some concessions that he may not want to make to stop the war, but he's also going to be tough on Hamas and make sure that it has no role in Gaza after this war. That's given him unusual support from the Arab states, and even the Palestinian Authority, which has been supportive of Hamas, which never supports peace deals, they're supporting this one, and I think that's why we've gotten so far.
So when we're talking about peace, there are different ways, I guess, that one could define peace, but essentially the killing would have to stop. And I'm wondering if Hamas has any other option than the one that they're being offered right now. What does peace look like in your expertise after this deal has been negotiated and is sought through?
Well, you're actually raising an interesting point. What are Hamas's options? They don't have any. They have nowhere to go. No one will stand with them against this deal. And if they decide not to cooperate, Israel will simply destroy them, and Gaza will be slowly rebuilt and will put in a new interim government without Hamas. So it doesn't have anywhere else to go. So I think this is a pathway for Gaza that is not a threat to Israeli security. Well, we can't fool ourselves. Hatred of Israel, anti-Israel Islamist groups are not going away. There will be more in the future. There will be more terrorist attacks. Israel has to keep up its guard. So does the United States. But maybe, just maybe, this particular threat will be neutralized.
So in your expertise, we're speaking with Fred Flights. He's the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security. The president made a bold move in June, where he struck the nuclear facilities in Iran. Now, Hamas had received quite a bit of support. You said nobody's coming to Hamas's defense here, giving them an out and a different option than the one that is being presented through the mediation of President Trump in the United States. Does President Trump's decision to attack those nuclear facilities tie directly into the ability to get peace done right now?
I think so. It showed him to be a decisive president and an unpredictable one. And I think it has sent a message to Hamas and to Iran and to Russia and to China not to mess with Trump, that he will take military action if he has to. It was an enormously successful military operation in which Trump changed his policy. He was not going to do that, but he gave the Iranians a chance. They refused to negotiate in good faith, and there were consequences, just like Trump promised consequences for Hamas if it did not negotiate.
So when we're looking at what this peace might look like, and of course we have to trust but verify, as one might say, as we go through the steps, 20 steps or whatever it was that were a part of this plan, I keep hearing you say, other experts say, that, you know, Trump's resolve, his willingness to follow through, not just use words, but to follow through, matters. That makes me wonder, you know, if President Trump is done in 2028, when he's done in 2028, I don't want anyone to freak out here, when he's done in 2028, and let's say a Democrat is elected, maybe a Joe Biden, Kamala Harris Democrat, God forbid, gets elected in the next presidential election. Do all of the threats that have come up and boiled up in the last 4 years, do they run to the forefront and become threats once again with a different leader in charge?
I hate to think about that, but I fear that would happen. I think Kamala Harris would have been so much worse than Joe Biden. And so many of these global problems were because of Biden's incompetence and indecision. Remember, his foreign policy priority, absolute number one priority, was not Iran or North Korea nuclear proliferation. It was climate change. And other nations were frankly laughing at us because of Joe Biden's silliness and incompetence. And it encouraged all of our adversaries to try things they would not have tried otherwise, such as the invasion of Ukraine, this horrible massacre that Hamas committed against Israel. American leadership matters. American presidential elections matter. And my hope is that the American people will realize this, and they will not vote in another president as incompetent on national security as Joe Biden ever again.
Yeah, absolutely. You are always voting for the commander in chief. We're speaking with Vice Chair, America First Policy Institute Center for American Security. Fred Flights is with us. Before I let you go, I'd like to shift gears because that's a lot of the foreign front. But on the domestic front, somehow or another, the president is able to juggle so many things at one time. The securing of our border and now the implementation of ICE to try to remove illegal immigrants who are here, who are violent. They are getting a lot of flack for that in my home state of Illinois. I'm curious of your thoughts on the president's approach and commitment to following through on that campaign promise to say, if you're here illegally, you're going to be removed.
Well, the primary responsibility of a president is to keep the American people safe. And with these far left anarchist groups like Antifa in cities like Chicago and Portland and New York, And in Washington, the American people are not safe. And I'm very happy. I live in Washington right now, considerably safer. I see National Guard troops on the street, in the subways, people going out to dinner again. And we know this is not the case in Portland and in Chicago. And, you know, I don't know the extent that Trump can fix this with the way the courts are ruling against him. But he's certainly sending a message to the people in these states that their elected leaders are letting them down by not keeping their cities or their states safe. And I hope they vote accordingly.
Yeah. You know, and I think, too, having paid attention to Illinois politics quite a bit, when I see the criticisms of ICE and how ICE is operating in a state specifically like Illinois, which is a sanctuary state, they forbid their local law enforcement to cooperate with the likes of ICE. I hear Tom Homan saying this all the time. Like, let us go to the jails where these people are being arrested and do our business there in the jails instead of having to do it out in the community. The J.B. Priskers of the world think that by protecting those illegal immigrants in the state, that they're going to be able to tell ICE to take a hike, that they can't enforce federal law in the state of Illinois. Do you feel as though the politics of Governor Pritzker in the state of Illinois are actually putting those migrants in more danger than they would be if the state of Illinois cooperated with those federal authorities the way other states are, so that those violent criminals could be handled in places like jails and prisons?
It's putting migrants at risk. It's putting the lives of the people of Illinois at risk. But the reason this is happening is that the Democratic Party, especially in Illinois, has been taken over by the far left. This is what this party wants. The people of Illinois have to vote out these far left Democratic radicals who are basically ruining your economy with out-of-control state spending and not securing the state and the cities. It's very simple. And if Trump can shine a light on that, I know it's really hard in Illinois because the gerrymandering is worse than any other state.
Yeah.
But if Trump can shine a light on that, maybe the people of Illinois will get together and say, you know, we have to vote out the people like the governor who's really endangering the state security.
Yeah. From your lips to God's ears, Fred Flights, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. We hope you'll come back because we know that both of these stories, the foreign and the domestic, are very, very big stories. And we've not found their conclusion quite yet. So we appreciate your expertise today.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much. Fred Flights, the vice chair for the America First Policy Institute Center for American Security, former NSC chief of staff, CIA analyst, and House of Intelligence Committee staff member.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.